insurance team.
Join in a minute. Happy to just introduce. Yeah. Okay. Hello, everyone. So the papers for this meeting update the board on the work to support implementation of IFRS 17, and in particular, they cover the May meeting of the TRG. That meeting took place 3 weeks ago on the 2nd of May, and it was the second substantive meeting of the TRG since it was introduced for the first time. In advance of that meeting, the TRG received 22 submissions. You can see all the submissions in the submission log, which is publicly available and is included in Agenda Paper 2B. Most of the questions included in these submissions were addressed at the TRG meeting, and the TRG summary was published 2 weeks ago. It's publicly available included in Agenda Paper 2A. As you may recall, at the February meeting of the TRG, TRG members noted submissions on three topics that relate to implementation challenges that may arise because the requirements of IFRS 17 represent a significant change from their current accounting practices. So Agenda Paper 2C outlines the TRG members' responses to the outreach that the staff performed to obtain further information to understand those challenges. The cover note provides some context of the relevant requirements, and the TRG summary reflects the comment made by TRG members when they discussed this outreach report. Important to know that these challenges have been identified by TRG members as a high priority in their implementation of IFRS 17 because of the complexity involved and the cost involved in implementing those requirements. However, also important to know that those challenges are not the only significant challenges identified in implementation of IFRS 17. We are not asking the board to make any decision in this meeting. However, if you look forward in terms of the next steps, what's going to happen next, the staff will continue to update the board on the progress of the implementation of IFRS 17. We will continue to accumulate issues identified with the implementation of IFRS 17, and we will summarize those issues to the board. We will bring it to a future meeting to see for the board to consider if any further action is required to support implementation. As a separate next step in the coming months, we will ask the board to consider some amendments to IFRS 17 through the usual process of annual improvements. And we have the third meeting of the TRG is expected to take place on the 26th of September. This meeting might be a two-day meeting as we want to allow more discussion as we're getting closer to the end of 2018. So that's it on my side. I guess we will welcome your comments or questions.
Mary?
Two observations and a question. The first observation, if I've done my numbers correctly, can't remember, it's in here specifically, it looks like we've had almost 50 issues, just about 50 issues submitted. And virtually all of them have been discussed or, you know, reviewed with the TRG. So thanks to the staff, but also to the TRG and those who are submitting issues to it for getting with the plan in terms of early identification and discussion of issues, which I think is one of the things we learned is beneficial from our experience with the, you know, with the revenue, I think, of TRG in particular. And so then when I look at paper 2C, which is, you know, this is the second of my observations, I think it's good that the process, in addition to raising questions about how people are reading things, also using the TRG to identify areas where there may not be questions about how to read it, but where they're saying, there may be particularly high effort levels associated, challenges associated with some of the requirements. And so I think it's helpful that people are also using the TRG to do this. But then, a bit of the but is that when I read the issues discussed in paper 2C, it seems to me that people are raising concern about challenges that could only be addressed by a fundamental reconsideration of some pretty central requirements of the standard. It's not stuff that's at the margin. And so while I think it's helpful that you went out and made sure that you understood what the challenges, the staff made sure you understood what the challenges were and that had the opportunity to confirm that understanding with the TRG, I would be really concerned if we were sending a signal that we might reconsider some pretty central requirements rather, because the stuff covered in 2C is not, could we tune something at the edges, at least as far as I'm saying. So I guess if you think differently, if you think that they are peripheral, tell me, but if they're central, I still am glad I know these things, and it's good that I have an appreciation of that, but I don't want to leave kind of false impression that I think we'd be very open to re-deliberating major chunks of the standard. And then I did have a question about the summary of the May discussion, paper 2A. And that's when I get to your recap, stay out of striking distance when I ask this question of you. Paragraphs 38 and 39. You report that TRG members expressed different views about whether it was necessary to clarify something. And then 39 sends a different message that whether or not there was lack of clarity, TRG members disagreed with the requirements of the standard. And it's just kind of the story ends there. Is there another chapter in this story?
So in terms of the TRG, there is no other chapter because the TRG have discussed this, flagged the issues. They share their comments, whether it is about reading the words or whether they like the outcome. The next thing that will happen is that, if you remember, in this discussion, there is a part that we are planning to propose as an annual improvement, and this will come at a future meeting.
Okay.
When
so
it will
then.
Come in a future meeting, we will cover all the observations and comments and obviously provide you with more analysis so we can have a better discussion.
Okay. But,
so in the future.
Can I ask a question about that the first question, that topic raised in 2C level of aggregation? So IFRS 17 requires insurers to separately present in the financial statements contracts in an asset position and in a liability position. That is something that we generally require in other standards as well. We don't like offsetting of assets and liabilities in our standards. Now, it may be that I can also see from the point of view of insurers, they don't do that presently. They don't look at their portfolios like that generally. And I can also see that would be very costly to adapt. So I understand why they bring this forward. My question, though, is that, and I've got a couple of questions. Does it happen more often within insurance companies that assets or liabilities switch from position from asset to liability? Is that something that is unique to them compared to other sectors of the economy, or is that not necessarily the case? And secondly, I know that majority of insurers do not do this, but there are also insurers that perhaps have more modern systems that do make a distinction between asset position and liability positions. Have you talked to them to ask them, do they see an advantage in that? Do they get information that other insurers perhaps do not have? And also, do investors in our current talks with investors, do they express that they find that information to be useful or not?
So in terms of switching between asset position and liability position, because the current accounting that they apply is a very high level, sometimes it's a portfolio level or even a full entity level, you don't get that much switch because it depends on the cash flow. So as the level is very high, you don't get, it's mostly liability position. But as you drill down and you need to apply the unit of account in IFRS 17, which is the group, and cash flows are, you know, you get them at different periods of time, you might get a switch between asset and liability position over time. For your second question, from our discussion, we understand that most entities and the industry that this came more from is the non-life practice. So we understand that most of them do not have the systems to support the identification of amounts with groups of contracts or with contracts. There are a few that are more advanced in as you suggested here, from what we understand, but there's not a lot of them. It provides advantage to management in terms of control of the information, but I can say that we have a lot of information about this because, again, mostly have a different level of aggregation in the systems. In terms of investors, I can say that this is something that has not come up as something that I see positively or negatively. There hasn't been much discussion on this one, but we talk to investors all the time, so this is something that we'll keep monitoring.
Okay. Amaro?
Excellent. Just a few comments. I will start thanking the staff for bringing the papers. I think I've mentioned this before. It's very important, to all of us. I think I speak on behalf of everyone here to keep following the progress of TRG discussions. This standard, of course, is very important to us. And the consistent application is key for the success of IFRS 17. So the TRG is very important. And for us to keep following the progress is even more important in my perspective. To be aware of the challenges around, and I particularly appreciate the paper on challenges, because sometimes we have only the issues discussed, but sometimes we identify challenges in each issue, but having all challenges together helped me quite a lot. So a few things that I think it's important. Looking at the composition of the TRG in the discussion so far, I think I would still call the attention of regions or preparers that might believe that because they have more simpler types of contracts or short-term contracts, they might not endure the same level of implementation challenge as or the more complicated that are under, like participating features contract. So PNC in short term, they might also be affected. There are aspects in IFRS 17 that requires lots of efforts, like the first one that you identify, the aggregation, and also the cohorts. The cohorts within aggregation is another layer of challenge. So I really would like to take this opportunity to call the attention of these jurisdictions and those preparers that have this type of contracts to pay attention. Another aspect is, of course, that impact depends very much on the present accounting model that is used in a particular jurisdiction. We, of course, have impressions, but we do not have, we can't assess the impact, but will be significant or less significant because the model varies. And then comparing these is important as well. And it's interesting because even in the report, you were careful enough to most of the time mention that under the TRG practice, TRG existing for TRG members practice. So it's, of course, reflecting the practice. And just referring to recent discussions we had last week, Emerging Economies Group meeting in Malaysia, and we had the opportunity to run a seminar within the efforts of implementation. It was a regional seminar, 17 countries participating, more than 217 people. And what we heard was significant level of support to the IFRS 17, acknowledged the quality and the expected benefits in terms of transparency and comparability. And thus, I think in this particular standard, we should pay attention in the long run benefits to preparers. Preparers will bear the costs at inception for implementation, of course, naturally. And this was very, very true in the feedback I gathered from that in that occasion, because two aspects that were mentioned more frequently about the challenges: resources and systems. So all of these are associated with the implementation. So they will bear the cost. But in the long run, with better transparency and better level of comparability, I guess my expectation, my certainty actually, is that they will have the benefits in terms of cost of capital. So it's very important. I think we should continue following, be sensitive to this issue. And the final thing that I think is important to continue to stress is the importance of communication. Communication between preparers and regulators, because regulators will be, at the end of the day, the ones who will be monitoring the proper implementation or the correct implementation to really gather all the benefits. And also communication with investors, as investors will be the ones who will be dealing with the information and will be the ones who will really provide the benefits in terms of cost of capital to this company. So thank you very much. I think it's important for us to be aware, to be sensitive to these issues, and to keep following the work that is being done by TRG.
A couple of observations. I think, firstly, I'd agree with Amaro that there may be some who have relatively simple contracts who haven't realised what they might need to do to implement IFRS 17. And my sense is that at least a couple of the questions that are highlighted in the implementation challenges paper arise from entities who have got contracts which will be eligible for the PAA, the simplified approach, who actually have found in looking at detail that some of the requirements, so the asset liability requirement and also what happens on a business combination, could mean that there's work to do that they hadn't necessarily maybe fully appreciated until they saw the final version of the standards. I think it is good and important that people are looking at the detail and raising awareness of some of these points. And then I wanted to just make a couple of observations. I guess on the this asset liability point, I think you said, Hagi, that we'll, you know, at a later point think about what, if anything, we need to do about things, including these things. I think an important piece of the jigsaw we don't have fully, from my perspective, on that issue at the moment is we know a lot about what the preparer's view is in terms of the cost and complexity. We also know what they think about the usefulness of the information, but I think we'll have to go through some sort of effort to make sure we understand the investor view on that, which is a little bit tricky because it's quite a fine point, but I think that will be important for us as well. And the last thing I wanted to make, and I look at my fellow TRG members as I say this, they might want to hit me, and they're too far away, so I feel safe. But I think one of the challenges we've got with some of the discussion that we had at the last TRG in particular was a couple of instances where we got to a conclusion where, and it's noted in the minutes, TRG members said that they could read the requirements differently. So on the risk adjustment point, we've got an explicit statement here, checking to make sure I'm not lying. Some TRG members comment that they could read the requirements in 17 differently. And when we got to the what's included in when you think about service for coverage units and looking at whether or not we should go forward with an annual improvement, there were differences of view on whether that was actually required based on the words we've already had. And I think as an organisation, we're going to have to think hard about what we should do in the circumstances where the TRG has concluded that you could read the words two different ways, because it's got implications for us in terms of consistency of application. And so I think we need to be careful that we don't end up with a situation, because the TRG said you could read it two different ways, that sort of becomes official. And or we need to think carefully about whether these matters are significant enough that we need to do something additional through our processes, our normal processes, to take action as a consequence of what we heard at the TRG. So at the moment we've sort of just reported what the TRG said, but I think that's quite an important point for us to think about. Hopefully they don't want to hit me.
Okay. Thank you very much.